Scotland has a very distinctive theatre culture, rooted in folk theatre and defined by a directness you don't find down south. Over the years, a number of theatre makers have told me they think that's rooted in the prevalence of pantomime, because the Scots take their panto very, very seriously. For starters, there are loads of them up north, and they tend to be more boisterous than anywhere else in Britain. Instead of cheap, celebrity-filled affairs lifted with a little bit of local colour, Scotland's pantomimes get pride of place. You find actors, writers, directors all returning year after year after year, blocking every December off to do so. But what exactly sets Scottish pantomime apart? Well, the critic Mark Fisher has gathered together a crack team of panto professionals to ask exactly that. With him in this episode are Francis Maley McCann, recently seen in Our Ladies of Perpetual Succour and currently playing Princess Jasmine in Aladdin at the King's Theatre in Glasgow. Across town, Julie Wilson-Nimmo is back at the Tron in Mama Goose, as is her writer, director and co-star, the panto legend Johnny McKnight. Between them, they should set you reaching for the mince pies, which gives Theatre Voice the chance to slink off for the season. We'll be back next year with a whole load more episodes, but in the meantime, happy Christmas.
My name is Frances Maley McCann. I'm playing Princess Jasmine in Aladdin at the King's Theatre in Glasgow.
I'm Julie Wilson-Nimmo, and I'm in Mammy Goose at the Tron, and I'm playing Lucy the Goosey.
Hey, I'm Johnny McKnight, and I am playing Mammy Goose, and I've written and directed Mammy Goose as well.
And you mentioned them at Robert, then, but I don't think you said that you've written Sleeping Cutie as
well. Oh yes, I have as well, yeah, I've written McRoberts as she's Sleeping Cutie.
So that's £2 a year, that's a pretty high turnover, isn't it?
It is quite high. Well, I mean, no, if you compare it to like Alan McHugh, I mean, he does, I think this year it's something like 32.
If you see his entry in the King's programme, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah,
Alan does about 32 or something. Mm-hmm. Like right. Year,
oh, completely different.
Yeah. So it's that way when you go, that's why you're like, I can't see, I've got a hard turnover compared to Alan, do you know what I mean?
And the question I'm interested in, I was just saying this to Francis, the question that I'm interested in is the way that the two things rub up against each other, the kind of stuff that you might do on telly or stage at National Theatre, you've mentioned Radio 4 or whatever, and panto. Does it feel like it's a different thing or a continuation of the same? Is it a different job, or does one rub off again? You know, artistically, do you end up acting in a panto style when you find yourself doing something at Our Ladies of Perpetual Succour being a prime example, strikes me as a show that is up front into the faces of the audience, making that contact that panto does as well.
Yeah.
Do you see a connection there?
I suppose in the way that Our Ladies was, we could talk directly to the audience and direct it to them when we opened it up, like you do in panto. But in terms of the way that maybe act both things, we got to be ourselves and Our Ladies and just go crazy. And obviously there was a lot of swearing, which there is none of in panto, so it doesn't really appeal to the kids, Our Ladies, but panto, you just kind of get to let go and have a bit of fun. And yeah, it's a lot to do with the story and make sure that is, you know, keeping the kids entertained and letting them follow that. As much as it's about having fun and the jokes and the gags, we always, I found in this rehearsal period, we always went back to the story and make sure that we didn't fall away from that just at the cost of, you know, getting a laugh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's different, and it's nice to do different things and then come back to panto. It's almost like a release. As much as it is grueling and you do 12 shows a week, yeah, it's kind of, you know what you're getting with panto. So, yeah, it's different, but it's nice to have different challenges throughout the year.
Yeah, and Julie, do you think that, is it a different sort of comedy you get at panto time?
I think, well, especially when I'm with Johnny, he lets me go a bit looser than, say, you're doing something like Scott Squad, and even though that's improvised, that's actually quite good practice for panto, because we do go off quite a lot. He goes off more than me, but so it's good when you can vamping off each other and stuff like that. But I think, I don't know, I just like the whole thing about panto, because my favourite thing about any play or any television thing is always the company. And I'm getting a bit older now, so it has to be, if I'm in good company and I can be set free, then that's what I like the most about it. I mean, I agree with you, the story's got to be there and stuff because it's for the kids and everything, but my attraction to it is the fact that you can get let loose a wee bit, and you get to go a wee bit wild. And I do love being in like a straight play as well, don't get me wrong, I love that when that happens, but my favourite thing is being in that room and Johnny lets you go. You know, he'll pull you back and that's fine, but because we know each other so well now, and Darren as well, and when we've done it with Kenny too, it seems to be like all the stuff John and Mike with you in mind, so it's to compliment what you can do and stuff like that. You still shite your pants when you do it, but you know that he goes, don't worry, trust it and stuff like that. So I love that. I still get a complete buzz from that when we first go in front of an audience and stuff.
He saw your inner goose and thought, this is
yeah. There's a lot of animals going on. There's a lot of animals. But no, I love that. I think even doing Fags Mags, my favourite thing in Fags Mags Bags is this bit, sitting in the green room with all the cast, and then we go through the studio. That's great as well. But all the best stories of what's happened when we're all together and what's happening. And do you know, I love that about it.
But it is that sort of thing, and that you kind of need to pull the, I suppose it's the difference between and sometimes telly and theatre. In theatre, you sort of need to pull together, and if you don't pull together as a company, you kind of can tell. I think, because you know when you've, for me anyway, when I go to the theatre, the thing I know, if I know I love a show, it's because I'm really jealous, I'm no part of that world on stage. And I remember even as a kid going to see Les Mis and wishing that I was in the French Revolution. Now, in no way, shape or form did I want to be a dead body in the French Revolution, but I felt like the world on stage seemed like it was more exciting than the world that I was walking in. So I always think that sort of should always be your aim, and it's much more isolatory, I think, when you're working in telly or that. You can have the camaraderie, but it's not the same as when you're a team doing 12 shows together and you've got such and such has got a bad back and this one's voice is going down and can you sing this line. And there's that. The other thing I love about panto is I think it's really honest, because it's like when people talk about, oh, that person shouting out my fourth wall was broken, all that, I'm like, shut up, you've been looking at your model whole wide. Like, at least in a panto you're quite upfront about going, oh, there's such and such, I'm playing it to that person up the back row. And there's a sort of honesty about the fourth wall's disappeared, which sometimes in a play I find that I want to giggle on stage and I'm like, why am I getting on to be somebody else? It's ridiculous. Why am I getting on? I can't see my mum and my dad talking about it. Like, sometimes you just catch yourself and it feels like you're performing in front of your radio. And you're like, what am I doing?
I think we were talking about this today, actually, before we went on stage. We were talking about drama students now not doing as much. I did it when I was at the academy, or one of the last years I did it, and I just found it so exciting because I'd seen it since I was wee, but I'd never been in it. Theirs was alright, whatever it was we did. But I was like, some people hated it, like they hated it. And Johnny and Dan were saying that as well, like they were actually saying, well, we don't feel like panto, that's a different thing altogether and stuff like that. And I was like, but have you actually done it? Have you been in the room and done it and pushed yourself to try it? Because I think with all the different genres within the theatre world in itself, you've got to try these things because you might be really good at it apart from anything, and you might really enjoy it. This whole sort of, there is still a little bit.
There is.
Oh, yeah. There is.
Well, there was like on Twitter this week, weren't there, about some of the actors saying they would never do a panel because it's not a real acting gig and it's not a real job and stuff, and you just go and work in a primary, go and do a show for primary school kids, and then you'll know if you're good at your job as an actor, right, do you know
exactly
what I mean?
Because
if I'm not listening to the school, like, we went to see a wee under show the other day, and it was 50 minutes long, and it was a group of 3-year-olds, and they sat and watched for the whole 50 minutes, and you're like, that's amazing, you go, because you can't fake that, 3-year-olds only faking it, they're only being polite.
They can't afford to have a fourth floor.
Totally. And you just, it's about kids, it's about young people being engaged in theatre, and sometimes we want to talk about it. Some people talk about it like, get a young audience and a vibrant audience, and you're like, this is the first entry point for most audiences as a panto, and your job as a performer is to keep them engaged, whatever that is and however, and you can't lie your way out and go, there, I think an audience today. Like,
you're listening to us.
Yeah,
they're
the
audience.
And but I wonder whether there's something geographical about Scotland, in that if you want to be an actor living in Scotland and you want to keep on working all the way through the year, whether you work in London or wherever, you pretty much have to do pantomime just physically to survive. So I wonder whether there's something about the theatre scene in Scotland where there's maybe less of that prejudice that you're talking about than there might be where you could afford to be in not doing pantomime.
I think also there's a different tradition up here, and that's not me going out and slack off other pantos, but I think up here we take a panto seriously in terms of it's no 3.5 hours long, and it's no generally smutty and like kind of dirty, mainly built for mums and dads. And compared to when I went down south to a couple of pantos, I was quite shocked. It was sort of slung together, and it didn't feel like panto up here was up here, actually. It isn't. I mean, I remember there was a year someday I was directing panel when it was Kim and Aggie, the cleaners, were in it, and the Doug that won Britain's Got Talent. And like, not down south, and you're like, you would, in Chico, I think, and you were like, we would never do that, no, I don't think, in a panel up here. It's sort of, you need to be good at your job, and hopefully it stays like that, but I think it's taken a lot more seriously.
Oh, yeah.
Folk need to be a good actor.
It's a proper tradition up here. I mean, just look at the amount of panels and Christmas shows that are on. That are on in Glasgow, not even Scotland, just in Glasgow itself. There's so many. I did panto once down outside London, and it was the year after I did my first one up here in the King's.
Uh-huh.
It was completely different because we had such an amazing experience at the King's. So when they asked us to do it again, same show the following year down south, we're like, yeah, absolutely. And we couldn't believe how different it was. I mean, it's fine. It was, you know, it was just different from what we'd experienced here. It's just a different, you know, kettle of fish down in London.
And you've got the experience right now of acting alongside Elaine C. Smith,
who
although she's done, obviously, Rhapsody Nesbitt and stuff on the telly, I would say that she's one of a number of people, and Johnny is supposed to be one of these people as well, that are famous for doing panto. Mm-hmm. These people know about them, it's because they do panto, and you were just saying just before that you'd worked with Gerald Kelly. Again, Kelly was known for doing panto. That's why people went, and Andy Graham in Edinburgh is not doing it this year, but you know,
well, Alice Stewart,
and I think that's on. I don't know if that exists. Well, it does exist in one or two places. York,
that's right.
But it's rare. I think it's just a much more serious business up here. I think it's because probably your music hall roots.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in some ways that we don't have Shakespeare as a tradition to go back on, in some ways I think panto's sort of our Scottish version of whatever, you know, the Shakespeare is, because we don't have that thing to go back in the canon. In some ways I think panto is your version of music hall that's sort of developed and moved through, because I mean it's still that mystery of, you go, how can you get a theatre and sell out every show in a panto, but then you can't sell 4 nights in the theatre to the same theatre. Do you know what I mean? It's just, there's a much more ingrained tradition up here, I think.
I think when you're wee and you grow up in Scotland as well, it's a lot of kids' first time in the theatre, and that still seems to be going on as hard as those shows are in the morning sometimes, but that's the very first time. A lot of schools, doesn't matter whereabouts in Scotland, they take them to the panto, because they kind of go, right, we've took the kids to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's brilliant, because that might bring them back in. And I think that's so important. When we were wee, I grew up in East Kilbride, and we used to go to them, and I couldn't believe it. It was just amazing, like coming here or going to the King's, and you know, it was unbelievable how much it affected me, and some of my friends still talk about it, you know, so that's really exciting.
Yeah.
So that must be ingrained, I think, as well. I don't know if they do it so much down there. But
well, I was in the 11 o'clock matinee at the King's watching Francis this morning, and it was just, everybody there was at school, where it was just, and when they did the readout of the names, it wasn't just individual people, it was like such a primary school or whatever, and the noise was just phenomenal, wasn't it?
The school shows, the afternoon shows are usually mental. You can't even hear yourself speaking, you get a mic on because they're just screaming, and it's great. It's such a good atmosphere, especially in the scene where we come out with the lamp and we're singing this whole song, and can be standing, you know, as close as we are, and you can't even hear what you're saying.
It's
because
crazy.
So good. It's such a nice feeling, and obviously, well, they're clearly enjoying it as well.
Totally.
I'm thinking about that thing that Johnny was just saying about the fourth wall and breaking the fourth wall that you have to do in pantomime, and Elizabeth Newman, who was at the Bolton Octagon before she's just moved to Pitlochry, She did this fantastic production of Summer Holiday that was semi-site-specific. It started off in the bus station, and the audience all got on at the bus station and got on the bus and went round the block to the town hall, and there was a couple of scenes before it then went to the theatre. But she, because it was a musical, she was saying to the actors, look, you're going to be starting in Bolton in Bolton bus station. You're going to have to be looking at the audience in the eye and singing.
Really?
And then they sort of went into rehearsal, and then one of the actors came, she said, you know when you said you want me to sing, look in the eye, you want me to look in the eye, you know? And then she said, yeah, because it was a big shock, if particularly, I suppose, you'd be doing musical theatre that you don't normally break that
fourth contact.
But I'm just wondering whether that experience of doing panto makes you maybe more confident in crossing the divide.
I think you just have to make yourself kid on. I think as well, when we rehearse, we're in a tiny room at the back there, and by the time we're doing a lot of stuff to the walls, and John will be sitting there and stuff, but when we go move into the space, the techies are totally bored of us, kind of like that. But when finally you get people there, I'm looking them all in the eye, I'm just so glad to see everybody. It's not a bored techie going, oh God, no, these jokes again. So it's quite, but I think you know confidence with that, because you just go, you know, if one person smiles back at you, you go, oh, well, do you know what I mean? You can get spooked if the schools are a bit like, can't be bored with this. But you think, they'll come round, they'll get into it, do you know? I get a buzz off
of
that.
I love it. I love to see who's in, and I love going, that person isn't enjoying themselves, by the end of this, I will crack. And especially like the Tron, because it's a much weird theatre, you can see everybody, like with Bob. Obviously, you kind of see the back, so it's almost like a kind of void, if you know what I mean. You can feel them, but you kind of see them. Whereas the Tron, especially this year, because it's a reflective dance floor, so you see the entire audience for the whole show. Even the back row, I can see exactly who's in the whole way through. So you're like, there's that person, there's them, there's... And I quite like that, because it means if anything goes awry in the audience, you can pick on them and go in and see what they're up to and stuff. But I kind of love that. I like seeing folk are engaged, don't know, and like... It's never, but I did a live art course, so I didn't do acting, so we were always about, there's no such thing as a fourth wall, you talk to your audience, it's real time, real effort, all that. So I always think it's quite weird when you're a bit like, I'm going to kid on nobody's there right now, and I'm like, that woman's eating a fleet, so she did. Why is she on her mobile phone? That's driving me mental. Like.
You know, it's funny about you even asking that, though, because I don't really think about it anymore. No. And it's like, if I was to do a play in challenging, I'd be like... Do you know what I mean? It's like, I remember got asked to do it once when we did Mention Week, see my name drop that in, and Graham said, you need to be staring out, and I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, this is all going on behind you, stare out, and I was so nervous about it. I was right down the front at the sets like that, you know, and I had to stare out with this big scene going, and I was terrified. I thought, I do this all the time, apparently, what's wrong with me? But I wasn't looking at anybody, I was kind of looking up ahead, but it really scared me, because I was like, we don't do that in this is a straight play, we're in this kind of, we're in this living room. But after a while I got quite into it, because you've just been like, disengage yourself from it. So it is, it's weird, it's not till you said that, they think, come on, we're like that, aren't we?
I would always like a play best if I could talk to the audience.
Well, we had that opportunity in Our Ladies,
yeah,
which was great. We had, you know, now we're talking to the audience and now we're back in the scene. But I had the amazing opportunity to do Mr. Blue Sky and was told to, you know, eyeball the audience and scare them. And that was amazing to have that power on stage. Like, six of us, there might be hundreds of you, but we are, you know, we have the power and we can, like, see you and you can, you know, that we're looking at you. It was such an amazing feeling. And also to see the people that would be loving it and laughing their head off, or we're sitting in pure disgust and you can see that, and you also revel in that, and you're like, oh, they're not enjoying it. It's great.
Totally.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when people ask me why they should ask me, I don't know, but ask me what the difference between Scottish theatre and English theatre is, I think it's in this kind of area that we're talking about, and it goes in two ways. One, as you were saying, in fact both Johnny and Francis were saying about sometimes pantomimes in England have minor TV celebrities in them rather than people who are actually known for doing pantomime, and sometimes they have, I don't know, just less of that kind of, I think the thing that you were talking about, Francis, of somehow it feeling less central to the culture. But then I think there's also something in the stuff, and Our Ladies is a good example of theatre that has that kind of, jumps over the wall, and it's the live art thing as well, but it feels... Sometimes when I see shows from England, he says with his English accent, is that I feel there's a fourth wall that you wouldn't get in a Scottish production, even if it was something like Mention Week. I think that's my theory.
Yeah.
I sort of know, like, and I know it's a bit generic, but to say this, and it's, but there's that type of, and I've seemed to have seen it more in English productions where it's like talking to the audience, but they're not really talking to the audience. They're not looking at me, it's dancer eyes through me, it's a monologue to a person rather than to that room, if that makes sense. There's a different level of intimacy, I think. I think up here, if we're doing that type of monologue, it is eyeball the person rather than generic floating eyes. Is that called dancer eyes? Like, don't go into dancer eyes where you're like, you're not even looking at me, it's dancer eyes, it's dead. Don't give me dancer eyes where it's, there's a back row and I'm pointing it there. I think there is a, when we do it here, it feels like it's, I'm pure eyeballing you.
Yeah.
But maybe that's just also because we're widows. Could also just be that.
Yeah.
I mean, it sort of feels to me as like it comes out of this sort of egalitarian thing that we're all sharing this space together, and it's not us and them, it's just
making
bread together or something. I don't know.
I think I quite like the whole thing of like sometimes there was a guy shouting out last night and Johnny knows, because I just kind of love it. I mean, unless they're saying something really inappropriate, that doesn't bother me, because I kind of go, that may be the only night out that guy's having his whole life, and he was loving it.
Oh, I mean, he was crazy.
But it was really funny as well, and I kind of go, that's kind of our jobs to sort that out. I mean, if he says something, then he'll get catapulted out, do you know what I mean? It's like, but there's something about it that's,
it's exciting, like that's the sort of thing where you're like,
really the same.
Why is that guy shouting taps off and trying to get shot? I mean, literally, that's what was happening last night. Was a guy trying to take his tap off and all that, shouting taps off. You're like, right, that was dream manager.
His experience was so different from
anybody else that was in that audience.
But it's, you know, there's something different, and especially being here, you're so close to them.
And when we're talking about this thing about truth, you've got this thing where you're all very, very, very busy doing 12 shows a week at the moment. Julie, you were talking about seeing Panto as a child and growing up with it, and so that's how one way you can sort of breathe in the tradition. But do you inherit a tradition? You're conscious of a tradition. Sort of in the Tron, you're often subverting a tradition as well. But I'm just wondering how you keep abreast of what the tradition actually is when you're too busy doing the thing yourself.
Panto is tradition for me, because we did them at stage school from when I was like 10, so I did it for years and years and years, right through till now. There's only been maybe like 3 years that I haven't done it since I was about 11.
And you go and see other people's pantos?
I've only seen a handful of them, because I was usually in them. So that's a tradition for me. So like last year I didn't do panto, I didn't do anything over Christmas, and it was so strange, like, to not be doing anything over Christmas. It was lovely, I was on a beach, but so this year I'm like, oh, it's nice to be home, it's nice to be doing panto again.
Do you mean like setting tradition for other people as well, or do you mean like, because our stories aren't traditional here, do you mean, or?
Well, I suppose what I think is that it's easy for me to say that you're all either following the tradition or subverting the tradition or whatever. It's easy for me to say that, because if I'm going to see 10 pantomimes, I can see how the tradition is manifesting itself.
Yeah.
But if you're actually in the thing, then how do you even know what the tradition is that you might be subverting?
I used to go to a lot more than I do now, mainly because I'm getting older and so I'm shattered in my day off. But I mean, I think my record was 12 one year while I was still
doing it.
I got to 12, whereas now I'm probably looking at maybe I'll make about 4 or 5 just today with pals. And also, actually, what's weird is the schedule have changed, so there's now hardly a lot of theatres now have the Monday off, whereas before it used to be Sunday off and you could fit ones in, whereas now it's a lot harder. There's the idea of tradition, I feel a wee bit like I care about it, but I also couldn't care less, just because when I first started writing pantos, my biggest frustration having been in them was one of my pantos, there was a cast of 9 and there was 2 women in the company. So the first panto I wrote, I was like, well, it's half and half. And that was like 11 years ago, before folk talked about gender split, like it was some radical thing, like, come on, please, get a grip. And that wasn't to do with me going, I'm going to make it a split gender. It's because there was better women up here than there are guys. I was like, more women can sing and dance. Why would you make it 7 guys and 2 women? And why are the women never getting funny parts? Why they never, like, why they just, they look pretty sometimes? That rips my neck. And so some of the things I was just like, I couldn't care less about tradition, because I think a lot of comedy's been run by straight white men for a very long time. So I think there's a point where you just go, well, I ain't that. So I'm no part of that gang, so I don't need to worry about being part of that gang, and do your own thing. So I care about the tradition, I care about things like he's behind you and all those things, but I also think for anything to continue and grow, you need to adapt and wake up to the time that you live in. And so certain things where I used to do loads of jokes, so like, I know it's a stupid example, but 10 years ago I did Mother Goose and went in the Pool of Youth and came out in a wee skinny Cher outfit. Well, now I've had a niece that's been through an eating disorder, so I don't think he can come out in the skin outfit any longer. I don't think it's good enough. So I've got two fat suits, and I probably wouldn't even notice one of them's firmer, one of them's more lifted than the other, because I think to tell a kid that the ideal of is about being skinny is wrong for me, and I need to live with that for the world I work in. So that's just about me trying to find my own politics through what that is and going, I don't think that's right anymore for me. It's not to say it's wrong for anybody else, it's just I need to put my name to it. So I don't really care about tradition in one sense, and in the other sense, I care about panto, I care about giving folk a Christmas night out, I care about kids coming to see theatre and thinking theatre's a great thing to be in. But the other thing as well is theatre artists, we are so behind what kids are. Like, kids know way more than I do. And so that naivety thing's gone. You can't do a double entendre anymore because kids know what it means. So don't kid yourself on it's a double entendre. You're like, the kids are smarter than us. They know more than we did at our age. At my age, it would have flew over my head, but now it doesn't. So you'd go, that's a single entendre, we're doing it or we know it. Because you can rest assured when the skills come in, nothing goes over their heads anymore. Like, nothing.
But see, if you're talking about tradition, I'm thinking about the ones that I went to, and you're saying about one that went, it's funny and stuff, but it's funny because the ones that I did see that I remember really clearly, not totally, back in the day, but I remember seeing Jenny McGrindle in one in here and thinking, I want to be her. I think she was like an aardvark or something, or it was maybe at SYT, and I couldn't believe how funny she was, and the fact that she was going, well, I was like, oh, I do that. And it was that kind of thing. And then the same at the sets, it was Mandy Matthews, and I was an usher at the sets, and I was at drama school, and she was hysterical, and she was talking like people that I knew. There was some posh folk in as well, but she was pure, right, boys and girls, and I had never seen that before. Even at the Kings, we used to go just basically see the ponies, because you'd see the ponies at the Kings, because that was when the carriage came out, that was exciting. But a lot of them were plain posh, whereas it's funny, it's like you could choose your different types of tradition, if you like, and elements are still there. Whereas the Tron, for me, sorry to bang on about the Tron, but the Tron for me is always kind of be that, and I've read things, people going, oh, I wish we could go back to Forrest Marston days and all that. That was brilliant, but I'm not bumming you up just because you're sitting there, but he's doing that still, but he's doing it in Johnny's way. Do you know what I mean? And giving women like me a chance to not that would ever be cast as the fairy or anything like that, but do you know what I mean? And that's kind of what's always happened here. There was always funny women here as well, do you know what I mean? And it's now you've came into the next thing. I think that's why Andy likes it so much. It's like, well, why not? Well, look at the amount of kids in that audience today, and half of them are women, do you know what I mean? It's exciting.
Every theatre news will have it in yours. There's always shout outs saying at the 17th panto, like there was one yesterday. Day that was mental, and it was apologising for missing last year's panel because she was in labour, and it was the first one she'd missed in like 12 years or something like that. And you're like, it's people's, like, Christmas Eve, and every panel was sold out before anywhere else, because there's the same families will come back on that same day, because that's their thing of, we go to the panel on Christmas Eve, then we're stressed out and that's what we're not have the presents. You can always feel that atmosphere in my Christmas Eve show. But I think there's an audience tradition with panel. I think there's your aim as an actor, tradition, and they're like that thing of feeling like this is part of what you do at Christmas time, and it's sort of weird to imagine no doing it. And then the other part is about the shoulders of giants that you're starting on as well. Like, you go, like, you know, Elaine C. Smith's there because Una McLean was there. Do you know what I mean? Like, you go, there's that, you know, and there's Stanley Baxter, and there's, you know, you've Ricky Fulton, Jerry Kelly, and you've got all those people who's, you know, they've all stood on other people's shoulders to get to that place. That you still need to carry that weight, but you need to then grow something new and exciting. And you go, it'll be exciting to see what the next thing is. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Who's coming up next? Do you know what I mean? Like Andrew McGregor and all that. You go, because it's about, a lot of folk just think panels are cut and paste of the same old sketches, and I don't think it is that.
But, and even it was interesting watching Francis's Jasmine, that I think maybe even 5 years ago, for your character to start actually having, this is a spoiler alert, but I was going to say, but actually having a fight with with the baddie at the end, that wouldn't have happened five years
ago. Even how many years ago was it? And I did Edinburgh as Snow White. There was a fight at the end, and the prince got to it. And we're all going, that should be Snow White. I'm in the corner going, oh, save me. It's like, this doesn't feel right.
No.
Whereas when I read the script for this year, I was like, yes, finally. Just, Aladdin gets knocked out and I pick up the sword and it's great. Like, everyone's commenting that scene is so good that the princess, gets to have some, life about her. She doesn't just stand helpless and she's feisty and... It's so much nicer to play as well. And
maybe that's exactly right, though. And that tradition is there, but it's twisted out because the audience won't put up with that anymore.
Yeah.
You're right, because they might have a rammy if that was to happen. You're just standing there helpless.
But there is a shift, because you go, 5 years ago wouldn't have been that, because 5 years ago would have been, as you say, well, it was, when you stand there. And I think there's also a thing where you go, you need to now wake up and go, that's no... Like, look at Frozen, there's a reason that became that massive success. It's because it was two women that were leading the whole way through. And me girls go, I want to be a princess, it's badass. Like, no, do you know what I mean? And you go, that's what... In the same ways, like, this year we were all like, we're going for a gay love story. And we're going to have a gay kiss. And we're going... And we've always edged towards it. I've edged towards it in two shows before. We did one miracle where it was the two girls moved towards each other. Mistletoe went to blackouts. You never seen anything. You did it the wee day, the primary one, just whispering, going, lesbians. And then at Robert, at the very end, you realised that the prince, that they were gay. But again, it wasn't through the whole show. And then this year, it was like, right, we just need to do it. We need to see how
that and also, works. And I think it's also one of the, that's significant itself, but also what was significant in your show is that it's not done as a joke. There's another pantomime that I've seen this season where there's one actor plays a number of different characters coming on and off, and a couple of them are gay, but it's always gay as a joke, he's getting off with the bloke, isn't that funny, whereas yours was just done straight, nobody comments on it.
No, and also, like, the first day we did it, because there's always a tension in the audience, you can feel it when they realise, alright, this is what you're getting, and I get that because it's something different, you're offering something different at Christmas time. But the first day we did it to the primary schools, we were all a wee bit like, it was all echoes with primary one, primary two, and primary three. And all of us were a wee bit like, well, let's just see how this goes. And like, to have a full auditorium at primary one screaming to him, telling him you love him. Like, genuinely, we were all crying. Like, all of us were literally tears in their eyes, but they were all shouting out to them, telling you love him. And I'm like, and also as an older gay guy, I'm like, that blows my mind, because that wasn't there when I was a kid. Like, it wasn't there, it wasn't seen, it wasn't talked about. Do you know what I mean? So it's, and you go, so in a way, that's another reason why I'm like, tradition can also be out the window, because, otherwise the princess is always going to be tied up the back and doing nothing. You're going to tell wee girls that you don't, you know what I mean, you're no part of the fight, you're no part of the army, or you're going to tell, and you're going to tell everybody that you find love. Like, there was an art panel, I went to see where they ended up with nobody, and I'm like, yes, I love that as well, when the girl goes, I don't want anybody, just tell different versions of stories, so that they go, oh, that's like my Auntie Margaret, she didn't know. Do you know what I mean, don't tell everybody the happy ending ends with two people kissing, and then it's because also the world's more complex and kids are more aware of it now, whereas as a kid you thought the world was simpler when I was young. It's no simple for kids now because they've got access to everything, just by the internet,
but again, I suppose coming back to what we started off talking about, one of the lovely things about theatre, and this is true of theatre in general, is that we are all breathing the same space, we're all in the same room, we're all looking at each other. I think that's why one reason I like pantomime is because it's like performance art as well, it just says we are all in the same room together. Isn't this what life is a bit like?
Totally. There's also that thing in there where you can't really describe it. Where you can come off doing a show and you just go, that was an amazing show, and you have no idea what it was that made it brilliant, where you feel, you didn't feel a minute of being on stage, but you just know that you and the audience are totally in the same thing. That's the thing I love about being on stage, when you have those shows where you come off and you're like, oh my God, that was just like, we're all, as you say, breathing the same air, but also like feeding off the same electricity, that you can be shattered and you go, oh my God. I've seen days when you're on the lines going, oh my god, I'm shattered, I don't, and then you're just put there, and it's like you're manic because you feed off them and they feed off you, and it's a drug, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that'll be my last question then, because we're running out of time. So my last question for all of you, you've sort of answered it already, Johnny, is if I think about doing 12 shows a week for 8 weeks, 12, you know, some of those pantos go right to the end of January, don't they? That sounds like a hellish sort of thing to do. So is it a nightmare job or a dream job for reasons that Johnny was just saying? Frances?
It's a dream job, I would say, up until the new year. Because you get the audiences and it's, you know, to come in and feel festive and everyone's up for it, especially around that Christmas week. But then I've done pantos that have went on till about the 17th of January, and by then, when you're still talking about Santa on Christmas, everyone's a bit like, you know, this is really late or it's really early. So I think I've done one also that went up to New Year, and that was just like the perfect run. So it's a dream job with the right timing.
Good answer, Julie.
Dream job. Obviously, because he's sitting there. But just honestly, even like it's exactly what Johnny says, you think, oh, where is this going to come from today? Everyone's sort of secretly thinking it, and then you get on there, and then a kid just bursts out laughing. I'm kind of obsessed with the wee kids and the nanas that come to the Tron. Sure. They just make my absolute life, and I just go, that's it, that's what the buzz is. And that just carries you. It's brilliant. And you miss it the day after it finishes, I go on a downer because I'm like, oh no. Got to wait another year till you get
back. Sometimes the after show party.
I love <don't know. laughs> Yeah. Dream job.
Yeah, for me it's my dream job, just in terms of it's amazing to give folk a Christmas night out. Like, it's amazing that you go, this is the one night, and it might be the only day that they go to the theatre. Mm-hmm. And it's your job to give them their night out. I've sang the same song for 11 years. And in every single panto, I reckon I've done it over 1,000 Mariah Carey along for Christmas is You. I think I've sang it at least 1,000 plus times on stage. And I genuinely, hand on heart, have never once been bored there. Like, just because maybe that's about my attention span, but I just think it's to get a group of people in a night out that are all buzzing for the same thing and just wanting to have a nice night out is a lovely feeling.
Yeah.
And also it's the only show, type of show in the world where if something goes wrong, it's totally fine.
Yeah.
If you dry or you slip or you fall or somebody's an accident, if the set collapses, like literally anything can happen and it can only make the show better. Love that.
Well, the slagging you get is and nothing goes without a slagging there. It's all that kind of stuff. But you're right, and
there's an anarchy to it that I love about it. There's an anarchy that sometimes plays feel like I like sometimes being in a play, but as long as it's a short run, whereas panel for 70, you're like, yes, go wrong and it's fine. Whereas a play, if something goes wrong, you need to just try and get out it and then try and not greet that you've messed something up.
No.
Because you don't mind in a panel, you're like, oh my god.
And you can't take it too seriously, I think sometimes, and I love actors, don't get me wrong, some of my best friends are actors, but sometimes actors can take themselves far too serious. I've always said this over the years, they do, and it's all, oh, and you go, do a panel and chill out and have a good time and relax, and you can still be good, but you know, you'll never get a buzz like you will doing a panel. It's brilliant.
Theatre Voice is an audio archive about British theatre. You can subscribe to the weekly podcast on iTunes or visit our website, theatrevoice.com, to find hundreds of interviews with some of the world's leading theatre makers. This episode was hosted by Mark Fisher and produced by Matt Truman and Helen Gush for the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. Thanks for listening.